mineral resource is in skilling your small scale miners. Have you had some corruption cases reported? Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair, and thanks to the both presentations. I think they show that some work has been done. I think we should say that. Chair, the... well, just to remind everybody, my name is Leonard Ramatakane, a member of the Portfolio Committee of Police. Back to my point, just a comment. I think that what the presentation in both presentations, including the DPCI presentation, they both confirm one thing, that the agenda, AU Agenda 2063, is critical for it to be implemented. If you look at the foreign nationals and the issue that they're moving into this illegal mining, it confirms that the foresight, the plan to address the issues in SADC, in AU, is critical in order for us to have a stability of development. I do want to just ask a few questions, but let me just say that I thought at some point that Honorable Mufongo was going out of the agenda item, but I thought, well, it is Friday. We want to make this point also to catch some headlines. So I thought, okay, maybe let me leave that. But the point is that I think some of the issues that has been raised are for a different agenda and discussion. I do want to say that the question that was posed earlier about the whether these two committees are sufficient to deal with this particular agenda, I think there are committees that are not in this room that must be in this room for this to discuss. I look at the period in which, of course, there is a long lead period for conviction, but I think that some of it, if it's a focus kind of work in terms of the specializations and prioritization, it can be shortened. But I mean, that's a debate that the Justice Committee will be at the heart of it, and I know that sometimes they have a view that they don't want to be pushed, to be told that they must hurry up. But of course, the hurry up issue is also a deterrent to some of these things. If you don't have a punishment, there's a perpetual activities. So I do think, Chair, that there are committees that are not in this room, including the Home Affairs issues around the whole issue about the foreign nationals, the illegal stuff, and so on. So I think that there is a work to be done, perhaps in the future, about that kind of work. Let me come quickly to my questions. I sort of like this plan, or a solution-orientated plan, which is the one about trying to introduce the small miners or small miners in trying to be reactivating activities in the mines where there is still a mineral resource. But what I'm not clear about is whether are you talking conversions or illegal to legal? I don't want to say I'm hearing and I like it while you are talking to conversions here, from illegal to legal, to legalizing the illegal activities. So maybe you need to clarify that we in fact clarify that in the context also of your own regulatory process, the tediousness of it and the slowness of it and the lack of capacity of it in terms of building that, because I think it must be supported, the issue about beginning to introduce and building. It is about radical economic transformation issue, beginning to look at inside to say we need to build the black miners, South African black miners or South African miners, if I use the term that is more inclusive, and your process in terms of addressing that. But otherwise, it's a good plan, because we begin to look at that. The flip side of that is, what are the obligations? The obligations to the miners, those who contract out in terms of their own disinvestment plan, and just leaving what are the obligations, legal obligations, with respect to either they leave and open stuff like without necessarily putting the resource, that tomorrow when they leave, the question of rehabilitation and making the place differently so that it minimizes the people coming to start digging. What is their obligation in terms of the act? Is there a gap there? If there is a gap, what is it that we need to do to address that particular gap? So that's the... will you say that the when you look at the map of where the problems are, and you can see which mine companies have a bigger footprint, and what is their obligations, particularly around those particular areas? You look at Harmony and you look at Free State being quite huge in terms of it. And what is then the flip side of it in terms of the responsibility? The DPCI question is my third one, I think. Okay. Chair, on a DPCI question, the capacity question has been asked, but I want to just add this question. You say on the slide, there's a slide that speaks to foreign nationals, but what you're saying, you're talking about the territorial, I want to use it looked like territorial expansion of illegal operations. But why is it that this territorial integrity or territorial expansions and wars and the no-go area is focusing? Is it true that it's only the two foreign nationals? Because the focus of the slides here talks about the Zim and the Sotho. Or is it maybe the shorthand that you use these two? I'm sure the footprint of it must be bigger. Your capacity, resource capacity, and how you protect the investigation as a DPCI that is sensitive, particularly around these, because when you talk about corruptions, collusions, involvement of state officials, somehow you need some wall that the information need to know basis, and you are able to use that. Do you have the resources for it? This is both sides in terms of it. Thank you, Chair.
In KZN, I always remind my colleagues that there was only one person who could not raise his hand. And at some point, President Mandela pointed to a member of parliament here. And when that member of parliament stood up, we were not in parliament then. He said it was the old man, Henry Kwala, who stood up. And President Mandela said, "Temba, can you sit down? I did not point at you." And Henry Kwala said, "Look here, Nelson. You know that amabhuna angiqeda izandla zami anginazandla zokuphakamisa. So lo ebephakamisa ibephakamisela mina. Now, Honorable Pikinini next to me, I could see he has got both hands. But I assume he felt today he's going to not overburden his hands. He's going to use his eyes. I didn't say raise your eyes. You raise your hand so that I recognize you. Let me give you the privilege.
Thank you very much. I'm Lula Mile, Pikinini, the member of Mineral Resources. I think when we started with this process that we're talking about today, we were not really in charge of this process. But when I listen to the board presentation now, you can see that there's a lot of improvement from where we were. Now, we're able to find each other on both the police side and the minerals, as we agreed in that meeting that we had with minerals at the mineral committee. Now, it makes me to say that before, we must really not forget where we come from. It was not nice where we come from. It was not nice. Now, we have to now to rescue a situation where we were just given a license. In that license that we were given, there were no consequences in whatever what we are doing. Now, this responsible government now have really intervened in a big way. Because today, we have to rehabilitate that land as a miner. And in the past, you were not doing that. That's why when you are driving in Joburg, you see these cars, you see the dams that we're talking about today. Now, I'm very happy that in this government, were able to have legislation and laws that were not there before as a kind of interventions. Now, I don't want when we are here, we think that these 20 years, it's about 100, 300 years that were dealt with us. That's what I want to correct first and foremost. In taking the matter forward now, you can see now there's a junior miners, which I think you must speak about as a department. It's one of the interventions on this particular program of illegal mining. How you are perceiving, how you are dealing with that, I think we need to do that as a question. The other one, you know, when you become a having a collaborating government, departments also, I think it's the one way that is going to assist us in taking this matter forward. My understanding in our first meeting, you arrest people, they could not be charged because there were no charges that were there beginning of this process. But now you can see that there are a little bit of those that are there. But I think we need to work more with the justice so that justice become clearer their role in what we're busy doing, we're dealing with now. I'm saying the issue of rehabilitation program, it's not our own making as this department, as this government. It was not our own making. I think we need to start there to make sure that they are really, when you're going to get a license to start working with, they have some kind of an agreement, an arrangement, that you need to leave this land in the manner that you have it before. I think we need to be very strict on that one. When you go to other countries, you find out that now there's an issue of an act that they are doing. You get in charge, the big businesses, they put money together to fix the land at a later stage. You know, it's a kind of a money they donated, they agreed how to work with that. So we need to make sure that we have some kind of acts and laws that are helping the government to intervene when it's needed. So these are the issues shared that I think I must share with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see that you're trying to prevent me from speaking here because I don't have my own microphone. But Mr. Chair, but I've got three issues which I'd like to deal with. The first is there seems to be a form of a policy direction being taken by the department for which I have not seen a formalized policy. Why I say so is there seems to be a lot of emphasis on small-scale mining. Now, I know the principle or the category exists, but not in terms of legislation. There's no small-scale mining in the MPRDA acknowledged as a principle which you can apply for a mining permit or a mining right. But it is more the question is more, what is the department's view on artisanal mining? Because clearly this is somewhere between artisanal mining, small-scale mining, and I would call it, let's say, formalized mining in terms of the MPRDA. Because there's a permit system in the MPRDA, which is everyone has to go through that hurdle. But there seems to be, and the impression is created, and you can see from some of the questions, that there's a subcategory now developing where you could then be a small-scale miner but not have to comply possibly with all the tenets and requirements in the Act. Now, artisanal mining would probably be one of those focus areas where the government could say, well, listen, we would relax the requirements or the rehabilitation requirements or any of those requirements. But then it has to be policy. And my question is, has the department now recently established a policy? Has it amended the policy if it exists? Because I need to see this somewhere in a policy embodied so we know what the consequences are, what the department is doing. So that's my first question. It raises with it some of the more important issues, such as the fatality figures, the injury figures on duty. Because if it's not properly regulated, it will have an impact on that. So we need to establish what the department's view is. And with it, I would like to know, because the formal mining industry is being hammered time and left and right and center about the fatality figure and the injuries and the lost time on duty. But what is the figure of people dying whilst busy with illegal mining? Because there the morality of what the government is doing or not doing will come to the fore. And I'm sure those figures may even be higher than what we are seeing in terms of formal mining. And therefore, government is duty compelled to act in terms of that what it is happening on illegal mining field. There are 20,000 to 30,000 illegal minings in the Free State alone. I've counted 525 job creation in terms of, I think it's the DMR's presentation, 525 jobs created. But it does not even come close to a percentage, a percent of that what is required to be done. So jobs is the most important factor. And it can only be done in some way or another by formalizing, let's call it small-scale mining or artisanal mining, and then back to the policy. But the third thing I'd like to raise is, and that's the most shocking part of it to me, we've had the opportunity of attending to the Free State, we've had the opportunity of going to Limpopo and Mpumalanga, but some of these photos, such as on page 18, on the right-hand side, is so clearly, so, what is the word, contemptuous of the laws relating to legal or illegal, just laws of South Africa pertaining to trespassing, illegal mining, and the failure, and that's where my concern lies, with the police as the law enforcement organization to deal with things like that, which you can see from a highway. How does it happen? How does it possibly happen that people are allowed to mine to that extent where it's illegal? And it continues for months, and it's complained about at the same institution referred to, the Sifakuna Small-Scale Mining Association, and very little is done, because we get feedback from those people who attend those associations and those meetings. What message does that send to law-abiding mining companies, citizens, that you're allowed to mine to that degree and nothing happens with you? In fact, I think I indicated last time at a meeting that there's something to I forget the exact amounts of vehicles, exporting chrome on trucks on broad daylight to the Mozambican border. And the only way it's legalized is by having way bridges next to the road in open daylight. And there are people who then, part of this forum, and then goes to destroy those way bridges because that's the only way of trying to prevent the export of illegal chrome. But how is it possible? There is 20 to 30,000 illegal miners in the Free State. You have trucks exporting ore with way bridges next to the road. Then it raises what Mr. Maslongo said. Is there any possible... Well, the inference then becomes stronger that somewhere, someone has a vested interest, whether it's political or whether it's legal, somewhere someone has vested interest in these kind of activities continuing. And if there is no police intelligence to try and investigate and give a proper answer to what's happening, then I'm sorry, we are on the losing road in terms of illegal mining. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Okay. There seems to be a question also from the chair. Let me just say, I like your invention. A very innovative. I won't mention your name, but I like that when you say three questions, then your package, you start with a submission. And then you count your own, on your own, that this is my third question. But when you look down, what is written is six questions. But it's fine, it's the love. They say, where I come from, Dong, revolutionaries are driven by the feeling of love, a love for the nation. So you love this country, such that you are prepared to sneak another four instead of another two or three. But they will answer them because they have been asked this question. Before I do go back to the others, can I give the chair?
Thank you very much, Co-Chairperson. Just two questions, one for DPCI and one for the Register of Mines. The one to DPCI, in the 2016 report of the UN with regard to illicit or illegal mining in South Africa, they've indicated five jurisdictions or citizens of five jurisdictions who might be involved at level five. Now, I've noted in your presentation you've indicated you've got MLAs with 19 countries. But I think our concern is also with level 5, the export and the end destination. I just want to get a sense, DPCI, in terms of the MLAs, also those five countries mentioned in the UN report. Do you've got enough cooperation from those countries and also footprint to deal with those issues? Because I think... unless you deal with that at the higher level, you're not going to deal with the other issues. So if we can just get indicated, what other support do you need? Because we must also today look at solutions. You know, we analyze the problem and we know the issues, but what are we going to do going forward to ensure that the law enforcement agencies do got the capacity to deal with it? My question to the Register of Mines. Now, if you really analyze your presentation, a lot of the work that goes to the police flows from non-compliance by mines and or mines that's been worked out and not anymore being managed. Now, my question is what measures you've got in place? For instance, shafts that are reopened on a regular basis. You know, what is being done? Is there any prosecutions? Is there any... you know, measures taken to deal with that, because it seems that a lot of the issues is from that regulation environment. In the end, the police must deal with the fruits of that, not being addressed, you know, effectively. So in the end, the police must deal with, you know, the entering of the mines that is actually need to be closed down. So I just want to get a sense from your side, what are you doing to also deal with the mine owners or try to those mines that are left just... you know, in the open without any management. Thank you.
Okay. Then you will decide how you handle this thing. Just before any other thing, I think I must concede. I'm not putting you on the spot, Mabom Siza and Umkwen. I think what you might have done even in your presentation, the point that I think other members were trying to highlight was that the level, I think there's more on the regulatory framework that is given, but there's no historical background on the crisis of illegal mining. For an example, I think the point that one member was raising here, the fact that historically there was no legislation that was regulating consequences of failure to do rehabilitation. And in the process of creating a law, you can't create a law that is retrospective. And some of these mines were remaining still having a lot of ore body that can be mined. And therefore, on the basis of that, what was left was lucrative for the section of illegal mining. And the manner probably of separating the types of illegal mining that you have and illustrate. Is it honorable to me to raise the question, for an example, if we were to have the stats, we may be too sensitive, but I'm sure the Committee on Police can't be, if we have seen those things ourselves, they can't be more sensitive, because I'm sure they've seen worse things than on our side. To just have a stat, for instance, we know in Welkom in Harmony, on that report that almost every, what do you call these things? Odd, ne? Not even. Odd days. That is Monday, Wednesday, Friday. It's a days that are set aside to go underground and pick up bodies. Which, in average, a day could be up to 6, even up to 14. So that you can have a sense of what is it. I think they say the highest that you have is Barberton, if I'm not mistaken, where at a go you can have about 16,000 underground. Now, so that you understand the magnitude of the problem. What is it? Honorable Lorim, I think, raised a point again. I'm not sure whether it might be more than that if we separate, Honorable Lorim. The last time we gave the department, we said, can you go back, do a cost exercise of how much it would need to just seal over or do a rehabilitation of the ownerless and derelict mines? And I think the figure was going up to 40 billion rands, which we said, this is just an assumption. We have not seen what scientific method that was used to arrive at 60 billion rands. It could be more than that. That's why I'm saying I hear members, which is what I like, are very enthusiastic and very positive. I think we should also appreciate that it's just the start of a joint meeting so that we can also have a responsibility to see how much police are expected to stretch themselves. Maybe it will help also, because in some cases we've said, even when we go there, say we ask budget, we'll have to look scientifically what is it that we can separate in terms of the programs that are there. Some are collaborative that we're talking about. So I'm just saying, don't feel guilty. Maybe the brief itself did not go to say what is it that might be expected so that we can know. I don't think we should hide this thing. Corruption, its effect, it's all over. It can even be amongst us sitting here. So to me, I do not something that I hide. We mustn't assume that police, when they look at corruption, they exclude themselves. They will be making a mistake. In fact, they've arrested some of their own colleagues. Now, I was showing the chair here so that we can understand. And I'm not in police, and I've got no intention to come to police. It says a South African police officer has just been arrested here in Guarulho, Sao Paulo Airport, carrying 6 bricks of cocaine. Mm. She was going to Johannesburg, flight SA223. You see? So, whilst we expect them to do their job, there are others who are seeing an opportunity not to do their job, to do the job of those that they are supposed to be chasing after. So we have, that starting point, we have to accept that we have a challenge. And I don't think that challenge requires different political opinion. It requires matured South Africans who would say, wherever I am, this is the role that I seek to play. If we were to go, that's why I said it might be too shallow. If they were to quantify the amount of money that you can get someone who's carrying 25 million rands in cash, not 25 million rands underground. So it tells you it's a very lucrative business. Fortunately, I happened to see you today. The last time we met, there was a case, I don't know how far it has gone. There was a case in, in Kempton Park, where the guy, there were two, were arrested with illegal gold, which was worth more than, how much was it? I think close to 200 million or so.
Yeah, on the project, it's about 200 million.
Yes. So, just one person. So, you are also not dealing with what is illegally being done. We are also dealing with a market. It actually means there is a market somewhere. Now, as we deal with this, that's why I said, the complex nature of it, if we think with one meeting we'll find a solution, I'm not trying to intimidate you, but if we think with one meeting we'll come up with a solution, I think we are. They will tell you, they should have written here, some of them, that they are sometimes even afraid to meet themselves, because immediately they finish the meeting, by the evening, before they leave the meeting, somebody tells you, there was so-and-so in your meeting, I know. They even say, I know where you stay, where your kids study, and so forth and so forth. And consequences are going to be there for everyone to see. The worst thing that we may not have heard, Babum says again, is that that illegal mining even spills over on what is legal or formal mining. They're taking over even those spaces. So I'm just saying, once we deal with this issue, we might have to go much deeper. Looking at the issues, Babum says, I'm not saying don't answer the issues that Honorable Schmidt is raising. Shouldn't we be talking about specific legislations that must come into play, including on the question of your emerging and so forth? But please, we are not asking for more work. But if it has to come, it must come. So I just thought it's important to say, maybe the background itself, we will have to go deeper, draw sometimes even the distinction between what is your illegal mining in the form of your zamazamas and what is happening with chrome, for an example, in Limpopo mostly. I thought we may not have enough time for now, but I'm just saying we may have to be seized with this as it is just a beginning. I don't know who's going to start. Whether the police, whether the DMR, you decide. DMR, you want to start?
I think because they started with the presentation, maybe can be afforded with an opportunity to start now. Okay. With indulgence, co-chairs. No, thank you very much, honorable chairs and honorable members of the... Thank you very much, Honorable Chairs, and also Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committees. I will deal with some of the questions, then I would hand over to Mr. Msiza to attend to the rest of the questions. There was a question from Honorable Jafta pertaining to the illegal removal of sand. What is that you are doing as a department, because it did not come clear from the presentation? What we are doing recently, because education is very important, we are currently educating our people to understand that there is a piece of legislation that is regulating mining, which is MPRTA. And so we are getting some cooperation, actually, from our stakeholders, because here you have this illegal mining or removal of sand taking place in our rural areas, and so we are making some progress in educating our people around this particular challenge. There was also a question from an honorable member, I think it's Honorable Thoman,
in relation with the measures that are being undertaken by the department to empower people, I think that members, when they were deliberating on this matter, they have also partially reflected on the fact that historically, you know, we did not have a clear piece of legislation that, you know, gives a specific directive on what the department should do. That is why the MPRDA came into place. Now, we spoke of the junior miners program as a concerted effort from the side of the department in ensuring that we empower and we skill our people so that they can be able to get into the mining space. I would not reflect on other measures. I think we'll come on a later stage to reflect on this in terms of what we are doing, because this matter, it is still sub judice, and so I will not get into the details of it. But it is also one initiative that one will say it is aimed at ensuring that we create opportunities for our people in the mining space. Honorable Ramatlakane raised some specific questions in terms of the conversions, whether is it illegal to legal or what. And so we are dealing with a very complex issue, and it's a very serious matter that we don't want to transgress the legislation or the provisions of our legislation. But you are trying to initiate measures in which we can be able to deal with the challenge of illegal mining that we are faced with. And so that is why Mr. Msiza also spoke about the engagements that we are having with different mining companies that are in possession of assets, and those assets are not being used. Now, our plan is to make sure or to ensure that we negotiate with them to release some of those assets or resources so that we can be able to deal with the challenge of illegal mining, because the major issue or the contention from the illegal miners is that there are mining companies that are in possession of land or licenses, but they are not mining. And so because we have been or we have granted those mining licenses to those mining companies, and so we can't just go in and take them or terminate them. Now we need to come up with some measures in which we can then have a better collaboration with the mining companies. I must also indicate, Chair, I'm sure earlier on when I spoke to you, I've indicated that this afternoon I'm having a meeting with some mining companies. We are in the process of engaging various mining companies so that we can be able to have a better approach in dealing with some of the challenges that we are faced with. And also in regard with Samanco, because if you look at the presentation, we spoke quite extensively around the illegal mining activities that are taking place around that area of Skukuni. We have also agreed with Samanco to have a meeting very urgently to try and see how can we address this particular challenge. There was an issue that also, excuse me, Honorable Smith raised as well pertaining to the issue of a policy. I think that from the side of the department, we do have a clear strategy on how we are going to deal with the issue of small-scale mining. We can come and share this information with the Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources, Honorable Chairs. And so I think, Mr. Msiza, because it is very important also to reflect on fatalities, you would actually reflect on this particular aspect. I must also indicate in relation with your question, Honorable Member Smith, that there are trucks that have been confiscated. Yes, indeed, with illegal chrome. But let me also reiterate on the good work that has been done by the Department of Mineral Resources and our police, because we do have those trucks that we have also communicated with the provincial department from Limpopo requesting a storage. And so we are keeping this. It would also serve as evidence going to the court. And so it is important for us to reflect on this very important collaboration that we're having with SAPS, because both our officials are quite actively involved. I must also indicate as I conclude that both the minister and deputy minister have been there physically to ensure that they engage with our communities. And so there is some progress. And so we're aware that even from the side of Parliament, there had been, you know, some visits to those areas. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable. Excuse me. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members. In terms of the issue of facilities, I think Honourable Schmidt, we do concede in terms of the law currently as it is put does not look at the fatalities involving illegal minors. But what we've done through the forums that we've established in the respective provinces, we do require, like in the Free State, we do request the mines to report those that they know of. And then we actually look whether what more can we do to deal with them. But I think for me and for us as a department, what is very important is prevention. And we work together with the mines to deal with it. Honourable Chairperson also asked the question of, say, how do we deal with the issue of effective closure of the mines? In the Free State, for instance, they will seal off the shafts at the mouth at the top with a concrete slab previously, that is, and then a distance later down they'll put another concrete slab. So the past experience that we had before is the illegal miners will dig a tunnel from a distance going down underneath the first slab, and later on they dig underneath the other one. So we have agreed with them, the Free State Mines, especially Harmony, that we must embark on a process of filling of those shafts. Honourable members, you'll be aware, probably they would also advise the honourable members on the visit there, that what they are doing now, they are filling the shafts the shafts down. And as a department, one of the challenges was the sealing of the derelict and ownerless mines. Excuse me, honourable members. Chairperson Luzipo was correct. Maybe we should have emphasized where we are coming from in terms of the challenges that we're facing. He's correct. Most of our challenges, especially with the gold mines and the platinum and the diamond mines, is from the derelict and ownerless mines. It's like we're dealing with legacy challenges. And we are working together with Council for Geoscience and MinTech. They are helping us in terms of sealing those. But previously, the way we used to we'll seal properly, we'll prepare the place, we'll put the concrete slab. But what we'll do is we'll put a marker, which is visible, that they used to be an old shaft here, so that the communities should be able to see that. But now, the disadvantage of that was that the illegal miners use that to see that, oh, there used to be an old gold mine here. So what they will do then, they will go then dig there, especially in the Joburg area, because it's very shallow. They can dig all the way down and then they go underground. You know, so we are changing the methodology, working together with Council for Geoscience. And in terms of the obligation by the mines, the question on the obligation by the mines, yes, the mines have an obligation, but as I indicated before, the biggest challenge is with the derelict and ownerless mines in terms of rehabilitation, because the NPRDA has assisted in terms of making sure that there is change there. I think that's the biggest challenge that we are facing. And we are, in terms of our APP, in terms of our strategic plan, we are focusing and monitoring to make sure that concurrent rehabilitation takes place where possible. I don't know if I've missed any question, but I think there was also a question on skills development, I think by Honorable Mhlongo, on training initiatives. Yes, the MPRDA, which was promulgated in 2004, one of its objectives, obviously, is to it's regarding transformation of the sector and making sure that we have adequate skills development taking place in the sector. With the supporting process, it has encouraged the mines to put resources aside to improve on skills development, and that has been happening, but we need to improve on that. But there's also the CETA system, which is also administered by the Department of Higher Education and Training. Now, on the mining CETA is what we call the Mining Qualification Authority, the MQA. Now, in terms of the Skills Development Act, it requires the respective sector to put across 1% of the wage bill for skills development, and that funds the skill, the CETA system. So the MQA, one of the things that has been identified to the MQA is that, yes, we can improve transformation, but if you don't have the necessary skills, it don't help. So the work the MQA that has been doing as well is to make sure that all the initiatives, including the bursaries, including the learnership programs, they assist improving transformation, not only in terms of HDSA, but also in terms of the gender aspect, the gender aspect of it. So it's a truly continuous exercise that we are dealing with. I'm not sure whether I might have missed any other question, but I think that's the responses. Thank you, Honourable Members.
One question again that you left, it asked the quantity of commodity minerals. Whether have you done that?
Our mineral resource is currently estimated at about $2.5 trillion. So you can multiply it by the 13.1350, and then in terms of the rents, it will be between 30 and 50 trillion rand. And that is mainly on the Bushveld complex that I've indicated. In other words, the platinum group metals. And the water bag in Limpopo, that is the coal. Most of our coal has been mined in Mpumalanga, Witbank, the Middleburg area, Secunda, Standerton, and partly Vryheid and Newcastle, right? But that in Mpumalanga is depleting the minerals. So we still have significant coal reserves in the Limpopo, the Waterberg area. The Northern Cape as well, in terms of manganese and iron, there is some significant resource there in terms of that. But for us, what is critical, Honourable Members, is we have taken that is very important, that we should do further work in terms of the micro level to say where is that resource and how much is it, and is there any possible investment that can accrue in those areas. So there is work currently done by one of our entities called the Council for Geoscience. It's mainly dealing with geophysical mapping and so forth. So there's significant and I think very important work that they are doing to further assist us in terms of the mineral resources that we have. But at the micro level, we definitely, and in some cases at the micro level, we can clearly say here in Carletonville you can get gold, and probably at this mine it's about, on average, the grade is about 5 grams per ton. And we can give you, some of the mines can give you the CVs of the coal that they are mining, in Mpumalanga, mainly we can tell you that it's Eskom coal or export coal. So I think we can be able to do that. But in a later stage, probably Council for Geoscience should be given an opportunity just to touch on some of the good work that they are doing in the space. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Thanks, Chairperson. I will respond to a question from Honourable Mbel, especially around the whether we have a capacity as the DBCI dealing with this, and if there was any feasibility study done, if not, and so on. So I will respond to that, and my colleagues on my left-hand side will respond to all other questions. We do have a capacity that is specializing on this threat. Structurally, we have a capacity that is focusing on what you refer to as strategic resources in the DBCI. And just further to indicate that, as we have indicated in the presentation, that this threat has interlinkages with other forms of organized crime. So with that capacity, we obviously need a multi-skilled team that is also investigating other forms of organized crime. So there is that specialization within the environment that is not solely focusing on this threat, but because it's linked with all other forms, so you are having multi-skilled teams that you would use to support the work that is being done in this space. So it's just to assure that we have specialization in this regard. Thanks. Talk to the other question.
Thank you, Honourable Chairpersons and Honourable Members. I think we've got two Honourable Chairpersons, so the flight cannot fall down, you know. Firstly, I think what I would really want to explain, maybe it will also be a way you can appreciate what we are dealing with. The issue of illicit mining is a global phenomenon. And beyond South Africa, in the African continent as well as in Latin America, the issue of illicit mining is enjoying center stage. In fact, there are credible reports indicating that in Latin America, that particularly in the Amazon area and Colombia in particular, that the diversification into the illicit mining has surpassed cocaine trafficking. That's the profits. And in many cases, and why we need to focus on the international strategy with the chairperson's question, is as we have indicated with the value chain, basically the criminal market is in many cases in Europe, in North America, as well as now more and more into Dubai, as well as India. India is the world's biggest consumer of gold. Now, with these dynamics, it is very important that we are able to get the global community to also be able to support law enforcement-wise. Now, countries that are mining will normally have legislation to deal with the possession and dealing in gold. But in many of those countries, this is not looked as an organized crime activity. It is actually viewed as a customs contravention. So that means you have failed to declare or falsely declared in terms of this thing. So with that in mind, the NCSMT has been working tirelessly on the international strategy. The international strategy is plugged in at a strategic level as well as at an operational level. On the strategic level, certainly we are basically working into the SADC countries as the immediate priority, as well as using, as I've explained in the presentation, using the UNODC as well as the Interpol mechanism. Now, the first step is to be able to get the United Nations General Assembly to be able to look at precious metals trafficking like we had for this situation regarding the Kimberley process, so that globally there will be this appreciation to deal with the issue of precious metals trafficking, which is not really the case at this current juncture. As you see, most of the platinum that is mined in South Africa that is stolen and illegally trafficked is going into refineries in the UK, is going into Canada, is going into Switzerland. And that is why we have to work closely with those countries. And it is through the intelligence we had, it is through the cooperation that we formed, through those mutual legal assistance, we were able to get very, very good operational cooperation, very good operational sharing of intelligence. And this has given us further momentum in being able to deal with the situation. So regarding the mutual legal assistance, it is a very cumbersome process. But I can say that through the cooperation we have, through the very good working relationships, we've been able to finalize many of these mutual legal assistance. At this stage, we are looking at, as I said, first our priority is to get at UNGAS the issue of precious metals trafficking also being recognized as an illicit trafficking activity under the banner of transnational organized crime. Then we will be able to get Interpol to also include it in its list of priority areas. So that must be understood. And what I would also like to say for your appreciation, the chairperson for the Police Portfolio Committee referred to the UN report. I would like to say that in terms of what you find in that report, South Africa has been a trendsetter. And many of the models that the UN is referring to is basically extracted from the best working practice that we have developed through dealing with this under the auspices of the National Coordination and Strategic Management Team, because this is beyond a law enforcement issue. And contemporary organized crime really requires that we go in a much more systematic way to deal with this elephant. And I can say that the National Coordination and Strategic Management Team is an epic example of how we need to deal with organized crime in South Africa. And we have been able to deal with this and be able to sustain this and be able to build on the situation. So we are very responsive to the threat. And we've been able to look at all the key focus areas. Where are the legislative gaps? Where are the dysfunctions? And we've been able to systematically deal with that in the various issues. So in terms of the case which the chairperson for the mineral resources referred to, Mr. Mulaudzi, that is Operation Tarantula. And Operation Tarantula was a multifaceted operation stemming quite a few years. It was very prominent people in the industry. I would rather call them in the level 4 category. And one of the challenges is many of the key players involved in this have basically looked at how can they be able to position themselves in the industry. That means they will get themselves a permit, they will be able to operate in the diamond center, they will be able to operate as a jeweler, as a refiner. And these are the challenges. So when we deal with these things, it requires very precise intelligence. And these operations that you have seen is a culmination of very precise intelligence. It's a culmination of very good collaboration using the full arm of what we have as government to be able to deal with it, from the Financial Intelligence Center, the Asset Forfeiture Unit, the NPA, to build these racketeering prosecutions, which we also have to centralize in certain instances. And in that one, the scheme, again, was not a just receiving gold from Zama-Zamas. It's a very elaborate, a very sophisticated scheme by people who understand the industry. And fortunately, we are still endowed with investigators who have the specialized knowledge and skills who are able to diagnose how we can best deal there with minimal risks to law enforcement and ourselves. And what we have found is they basically abuse various schemes. The one is to be able to intermingle the Zama-Zama gold, if I can call it, or the stolen gold, together with the stolen jewelry from house and business robberies. And once they do that, even the gold fingerprinting process may not be able to give an answer. So that is the one scheme. The other one is, naturally, there's a bit of round-tripping of gold moving between destinations to try and basically give us the long chase. And the other one is the issue relating to the VAT scheme. Now, the VAT scheme is basically one that they exploited for a while, but working with SARS, we've been able to strengthen policy around that. And this group has certainly defrauded SARS for huge amounts of money, which is currently part of the racketeering case against themselves. Okay, so basically, okay, the issue relating to the first question from Mr. the Honourable Lorimer is the issue relating to the crow mining in Limpopo. And basically what we have found there is two scenarios. The one is the bread and butter issues, where you find the gogos and the children that were basically amongst the bigger picture that you would find there. Now, what we have been able to do is to be able to respond adequately. Is there is operations that would look at the more bread and butter issues, but since the NCSMT has visited the area, we have basically intensified operations, and there is ample evidence of more law enforcement deployment. There is more collaborative working, including with the Department of Mineral Resources. And just in terms of seizures, from the beginning of the year until May, there has been 42 suspects that were arrested, 26 trucks seized, 14 excavators, and huge quantities of chrome that has been confiscated in the issues relating to the chrome mining. We are further having proactive operations, which will yield results in due course. So I think that is being dealt with, and we are looking at operations that will certainly be able to be choke points to be able to intercept the chrome that is being exported. So those are also among the issues that we would look into. Then in terms of what is the losses generated, I think really there is various estimations being bandied around. This is the first I heard of the 20 billion. I know in March it was looked at 10% of the value of the industry at 6 billion. But I think what we have to also understand is whether we're dealing with narcotics or human trafficking, all sorts of estimations are made. What is important for law enforcement is to position themselves to disrupt, dismantle, and neutralize. And I think in South Africa, as I've already emphasized, we are the trendsetters. Internationally, the work we are doing is recognized. And I think this committee also needs to take, or these committees need to take recognition of this situation. Now, in terms of the NCSMT, as I've explained, from the police itself, we have incorporated all the operational divisions. And I can confirm that Crime Intelligence is an active partner. In all those intelligence-led operations that we have done, they have been very instrumental in providing intelligence support in those operations. They have deployed assets, and they continue to walk side by side in dealing with this beast that we are dealing with. So the intelligence services, and as you have seen, we are also utilizing the State Security Agency. So the intelligence community at large is being mobilized so that we can be able to get a better appreciation of the threat regionally as well as globally in dealing with the situation. Now, when we look at the five distinct levels and the issue relating to the Zama-Zamas, I think what is, call it, obviously known. In the Zama-Zama level, the majority of the people that we are detecting are foreigners from mainly our SADC countries, and there are three countries from which most of them originate. And despite these intensified operations, we continue to be able to find them. Some are from the ranks, including the Zamas, of being ex-miners, and we have even found recently that they are locals. As they lose their jobs, they basically will be attracted into this world of being a Zama-Zama. So at that level, certainly for them, it's not anymore, I think, a bread and butter issue. They do form a substantial link into the organized crime ventures. So in dealing with the Zama Zamas, certainly the honorable members did speak about how do we strengthen our interventions. And certainly we have porous borders, we have numerous border posts, and we know the obvious challenges. But from a law enforcement point of view, this has not stopped ourselves from continuing to sustain operations in the Free State, in Gauteng, in Limpopo, and the other provinces, including the Northern Cape, which is very much more a domesticated situation, but the situation is also a dynamic situation now, where we are also seeing a new diamond rush that is basically finding itself into the situation. I think maybe with the Honorable Mbele, I think with my responses, hopefully it talks about how we are dealing with the complex situation, the cunning and morphing people. Our general answer the issue relating to training and skills. But as you have seen on the NCSMT, one of our subcommittees is training. And we have looked at training extensively to ensure that people have the specialized knowledge and skills, so that we can better investigate, we can better prevent, we can better prosecute. And I can even tell you that in the different hotspots, the local prosecutors who have been working with this, together with the DPP's offices, even organized workshops, so that we can look at how do we enhance the investigation, because if the investigation, the route is not right, how are we going to better prosecute? And I can tell you very creative juices has come out there. And the determination of prosecutors that we are dealing with, especially with the food supply chain. And the question was asked by the Honorable Chairperson relating to how we are dealing with the food supply chain. I can tell yourselves that in the Free State, where this is basically a very unique situation, it's not found in other provinces, immense energies have been devoted. I'm sure people have become bald thinking about how we're going to deal with this situation. But what I can really say is we have been able to firstly disrupt very systematically all the premises that are being utilized in this. In what we are actually finding is here is a parallel economy. It is not the actual macros and that are involved. We are finding organized crime who are basically colluding together with the Zama and the organized the illicit mining networks who form these food supply chain networks. And we've been able to seize tons and tons. Those things that you are seeing is visuals from police seizures. We have filled police station warehouses and whatever else dealing with this situation. But what is important is how do we prosecute these people? And I can also say to this house, that if you're looking at impact, the fact that we've been able to choke the food supply chain, it's also resulted in the Zamas not being able to get food. So that forces them to basically come out. The prices are getting higher, as we know that you can pay thousands of rand just for having a Kentucky barrel underground and all kind of things. We spoke about Project Masimong. Project Masimong had to be appreciated, where they have set up an entire parallel mining operation using the resources of the mine, from the telecommunications, from the electrical, basically adapting. As we have been doing operations, they have become adept. That investigation was not viewed as a Zama-Zama operation because the kingpin lived. He had his own boardrooms. They slept there. They did all the business underground. But for 2 years, they operated. Just to present that as a racketeering case, we had to reconstruct the entire scene together with Harmony Gold and their DPP's office to be able to show very, very professionally, using geologists, mining geologists, who say 120 million rands worth of gold would have been taken from the time the mine stopped operations there. So one can be able to see the level of focus we have. We're not looking at things in a way just to say this is Zamas. Very, very good evidence was collected. Every piece of paper, everything, every cell phone was all well documented to build that case, and I think the results were spectacular to talk about. So the issue relating to border posts, I came into my project, in my presentation, I indicated the constraints, And I think that is really why we are presenting this, so that our cabinet, the honorable members of these two committees, who are certainly at the forefront of trying to support us, can see what are some of the chronic and perpetual challenges we have. And this is not limited to illicit mining. We're dealing with transnational organized crime at its best, and it is diversified where the inbound and outbound, the transnational dimensions of organized crime that we are able to find. The issue of collusion and complicity, and how do we protect our operations? Firstly, these operations were not snapshot operations. It required, because we're dealing with law enforcement, because we're dealing with our own, we had to do very, very well guarded operations. And I can say today that these operations that we are running, you can have the assurance that we have the tradecraft to protect the confidentiality and the discreetness of our operations. And the people that are involved, we have identified numerous people, and we are going to deal with them. And as the general has explained, we're not dealing with things just from an illicit mining point of view. Our operations, if you can just recall, with the neighboring Lesotho at the border post, Ficksburg, Caledonspoort, we have locked up entire shifts of people who have been involved in corruption there. So you can see how wide our net is stretching in that. Regarding police firearms, I think we have not had police firearms that I am personally aware, but firearms is basically a very popular instrument to be able to protect turf, to be able to protect your operations. And we've also found that in the Masimong operations, there was a high level of sophistication, because the entire operation was even organized in such a way that there could not be rapid entry from the security or law enforcement. They actually had booby traps built in this whole thing. So you can see the officer safety issues that we're dealing with. But the issue of firearms, I think we spoke earlier this week to the Police Portfolio Committee, and I think the focus areas are known, where we are going to look at dysfunctions in terms of firearms that are being sourced from house robberies, from police and other government armories, as well as where it may be illicit trafficking. So in the case of the Zamas, our intelligence indicates that they are getting firearms also from some of the neighboring countries. But we are working on that, and I think the seizures of firearms accompanies most of those arrests. The Honorable Molibatsi spoke about 48 hours and confiscated metals. So just to make life easy, it's just a general rule. No person may be in possession or deal with unwrought gold or with the issues relating to uncut diamonds. So in any event, whenever we seize this, it can never go back to the accused, because he may not possess it. It's like drugs. It's one of the areas we do not have a challenge to return it to the legal owner. It is automatically returned to the lawful owners. If it is found on mine property, it will normally be the mine, because naturally it was taken from one of those listings. Okay. I think on the issues of the foreign nationals, we did answer. So I think I've given an extensive answer, hopefully covering all the honorable members.
I like the passion. Honorable members, so that we can have probably a focused discussion. We were conversing here whether we shouldn't try and assist the meeting. I know you have been sitting, you have not even stretched your legs. To say, one, as chairpersons, shouldn't we be seized with the task of organizing another meeting? That meeting primarily must include now Home Affairs, international relations, justice, as well as state security. But that meeting should not be a one-day meeting. Must be a meeting that we can find a way whether we can spread it, and if we can negotiate with the other committees. and also with the House Chair to give us space. This is a serious matter. And I think we must also accept and agree that it borders on national security. We're just saying, because the information that we are given, we are more interested now to say, what are you doing? We may need to go deeper. Unfortunately, we have not done with our oversight report from Mineral Resources on the Limpopo, Mpumalanga and Gauteng visits. We still have to finalize that report and then be able to submit. And say one of the issues that we'll have to look at is now to narrow down what is it that we define as illegal mining in a proper sense. What are these different categories of illegal mining? And I think, for instance, the point, if you talk about sand mining, may not necessarily require the law enforcement agencies to do that. Because I'm sure if they see a truck with sand, they can't say every truck that stops, give us a permit to have a permit. It may require, it's an administrative matter for the Department of Mineral Resources that must make referrals. Then there is an issue that might be a question of the system which you must deal with, for an example, on different commodities. I think the point that Babu Njomana was raising, we're giving you an exemption for now, was raising also, just before I forget, was, which is something we can do, we can assist. What commodities, mineral commodities, do we have in South Africa? And by line of prioritization, which are these ones that remain, whether it's gold, diamond, chrome, manganese, platinum, and so forth. I think that is the context. And then what we must do, then we deal with that issue, we must then categorize certain areas. I'm not sure how you will compile your report, because I don't think each and everyone will have the luxury of presenting a report, but I think you have a duty in that multitask team that we are talking about, to separate so that we can be able to pin down what are the issues that might remain. For instance, not every element, Babu says, I'm sure will agree with me, not every element of derelict and ownerless mine is a criminal matter. Because others have got more to do with issues of human settlement and other industrialization issues. If you look on the case of, was it Egurulin, where there was a young child who just went down on a sinkhole. That is just a threat to life. Unlike the question of your type of illegal mining, which is based on derelict, ownerless and derelict mines, that still have got commodity benefits that illegal miners can do. So that we also don't sound like we include that anything that is derelict and ownerless mine has got a threat of mining. There are others that don't have a threat. They are just a threat to the to public safety, like sinkholes and so forth, that when you close them, you may not be closing them for the sake of blocking. So I think what we need to then pin down that. Then let's look at what could be the solutions. The first issue, obvious, is cooperation on law enforcement. The second one, it could be the issue that we are talking about. How do you deal with the issue of, because if police may, in Welkom, just one mine, we were told there were underground 16,000 illegal miners who can stay underground, by the way, some of them for 6 months, because all the supply is there. There were more than the population of the township. So one of the reasons is that the issue of illegal mining, when it comes to trade, it also poses national security. So if those people were to be, so as you close police, we may close the mines, but there is a potential you are increasing their task, because those people, when they can't find work, then it means mabayo bambingunze lukshi. So once you address this, we must look also what are the other possible threats in trying to scale down on those things. So we may then have to look at that. The third area could be the issue that honorable members were talking about, how do you legalize the illegal? Or how do you formalize the non-formal? But I think we'll then have to, so I'm just saying, when we come back, we then must be able to say, this is what we are looking at. I think we'll not be doing justice, although the committee is not here of justice. We'll not be doing justice if we don't get a quantification. So as you go, you see the problem with us, we come, we make declaration. I think it will help the committees to say, in order to perform this task, because Mineral Resources is having grievances, I told them in one call, I said, part of the problem is that when you perform your task to the maximum, but you come back and complain that the money is not enough, but we'll tell you what you have done the work, how do you ask for more? So we must be able to have a quantification. What is it that we can be able to get, and a time frame? To what extent are we working in terms of your milestones? Is there a need for a legislative intervention? So I think those are the questions we may have finally to deal with and zoom into them, and then see whether do we need overlapping legislations. Because some we may find that they are illegal simply because the process of licensing itself is complex and is not user-friendly, doesn't make it possible. They may be trading illegally, like I said, in sand, simply because they don't have a water license. I'm just making a general example. But there are those that might be criminal in nature. I don't know, but I thought if we then go there, so that when we go to international relations, we then look on what global interventions that might be needed or blockings that we need to do. That's why I said international relations. In terms of, are there any conventions that we may need to reinforce? I thought I must just, before we do anything, then if it needs be, we've got two options. I'm not enticing you with going home. We've got two options. If it's moved, we've got two options to take a break, then come back, take a decision, or we have an option to say we ask them to go and consolidate their work, and then we'll come back when we have included those committees. If that will be the agreement, then we've got a duty also with the chair here, that when we convene those, before we convene as a committee, we take those who are not here on board, especially the chairpersons of the other committees, on board on why we think that they are critical to be part of this. That is the proposal that we want to come with on the chair.
We take the suggestions, the easy one. The easy one is the go away, consolidate, come back, and have a discussion with the inclusive of other committees.
Any second?
No, Chairperson, I wonder because, you know, the reason why I was asking the question of about quantification. Mineral Resources are not going to be with us forever. And without cooperation or without having support from organized business, so that we can have a strategic look, and I think maybe the chairperson of our portfolio committee on police, in terms of our experiences in our recent visit to UK, business plays a key role even in the sphere of security, because without them also guiding us moving forward, we might actually head towards the same situation. Now, I wonder if and only if in your suggested future meeting of various stakeholders, we can have at least a buy-in or also organized business invited to that, so that we can then be able to make them have a buy-in into this and also advise moving forward as to what can then be done. Thanks.
You see, Jomai? I see what you say, but don't be a coward to say what you want to say. say what you want to say.
No, Jefferson, I, you know, I'm not necessarily a coward, but you see, South Africa is a very complex country. And without us actually pursuing, I know our position, for example, from where I come from. Our position is very clear of what needs to be done. But
just to say simple, Chair, in this team, I second in this team, but can we consider adding organized business?
You have failed me.
Now, I want a second. So if you second with that proviso.
I second with that addition.
We will go out, we will look at other stakeholders. Because I don't want to say business and then others start to say how. We will look at that proposal, but we were making a suggestion on the basis of the committees, because I want you as honorable members to be sensitive to the fact that when you invite people and you invite them with others, that also may be the issue. But I think the point that Njomane is saying is that whatever we do as committees, let's have the cooperation and the buy-in of other stakeholders, in particular organized business. I think if we say so. Is that seconded by you, Njomane? Okay. I don't want to close, but but I think on my side, let me thank you very much. I know when you come to meetings, sometimes the way you are grilled, you feel like, hey, these people don't appreciate the work that you are doing. No, we appreciate the work that you are doing. And I think you are doing well. But like me, who lived in another life before, I know sometimes you write a report, compile and be thick as this, then someone just carries it like this and say, what is this? What is this? And you get so frustrated. No, you are doing a very good job. But we want to enhance that work that you are doing. We want also to provide our own wisdom. So never get demoralized. We're all the same. We have got one goal and we have got one objective. Those challenges, if we put a collective effort, surely they will not be, they are not insurmountable challenges. So thank you very much for me on the presentation, but I can't close this meeting. I was told in my church, if someone opens the Bible, you've got no right to close it, except if he says close it. Those who used to smoke, I was told the fight can just erupt on the basis that the niggas escape, and you decided to uguitisha, and at the end of the day is a fight. So you don't close what was not opened by you. Babu Pukman, thank you very much.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Thank you, honorable members, for your participation. Also, thank you to the department and also to DPCI for their presentations. I think in terms of timelines, of course, we will only look at towards the end of November. But I think from the police committee side, we will definitely monitor, the activities on a constant basis as part of our quarterly overview to ensure that things happen. And I think it was a productive meeting. It's a complex issue, and we need all departments to contribute to looking at solutions. So we will definitely then, at the end of November, again collectively look at it. Thank you very much. Meeting is closed.
Why am I stuck here? I'm stuck. Don't stuck in the chest. Hey.